Aho, Manonagon. Welcome to our seventh episode. That's right, seven. Wow, thanks for staying in tune and listening to us. Like I said, we're about to hit a milestone. It'll be four-digit listeners, or episodes I've been listening to anyways. So I appreciate all the listener support. Keep sending us questions. We'll answer them. If you want to be a supporter, support us. But the best way you can support us really is just to listen, and that's what we enjoy. So Sam likes making those sick beats, and I like to bug Sam with questions. So, you know, Sam, you have anything you want to add to this intro before we get going? And by the way, me and Sam are slowly doing this COVID protocol. I think eventually soon, I keep saying this, we're going to meet up and sit down in a Wi-Fi place for a luncheon or something and just knock out an episode and really see how crazy it can get. So that'll probably be like the 2-hour special episode. Hey Sam, did you hear the one about the did you read that about the silver monolith that was found in Utah? Apparently just appeared. Somebody that was counting sheep from a helicopter spotted it. Apparently he'd been there since, I think, 2016, according to Google Earth. And now, after it's been found, it has slowly disappeared by a group in the middle of the night. So, was it artwork? Or was it something from Space Odyssey 2001? What are your takes on it, man?
I did see that story. I watched a video on it, and like just like you said, the sheep counters there, they saw it and went down, and they had taken a lot of pictures and, of course, compared it to one of these movies where something had happened on the planet and there were monkeys hanging off of this obelisk out there, and or monolith, and so it was funny to me to see the people taking pictures with it. They looked a lot like the monkeys to me, but I didn't know that it had been taken down. The information that I saw said that it was too well, planted to have been something that fell from the sky. That was what I thought it was maybe something had fallen off a satellite or something. But they said it was too well made to have fallen off of a satellite. What it is or what it was, though, I can't really guess. I never saw it or touched it or felt it, and now in today's world of digital editing and crazy stories, sometimes you don't know what to think, but if there's anything that we can research out there and look at it more, that always makes it interesting. One of the similar things I've come across in researching that really, really confused and perplexes me is this. It's like there's a big black monolith in space. You may have seen it from 2001, A Space Odyssey. I believe it's in that movie. But there are reports from space. Even some astronauts have said that this big monolith exists in space. I don't know how it got there, and neither do they.
Sam, tighten your seatbelt. This one's going to blow your mind. We're going to update the monolith. We just talked on the phone about this, and how could there be more updates? Well, there is a monolith, a shiny triangular one, 13 feet tall, has now been found in northern Romania. That's right, northern Romania. And the monolith is between the Dacian fort, a fort built by the Dacians, which was around 1200 AD. And the other, and one side of this monolith actually faces a place called Holy Mountain, right? So either someone's having fun with the expense of all of us, who knows, or something truly deep is going on out there and we're all about to get really smart. Yeah, I don't picture that happening. But anyway, so we will stay tuned to the monoliths and keep you posted on what's really going on out there. If you see any monoliths in your backyard next to the crop circles, please let us know. There's a lot of sarcasm in that, by the way. My yard isn't big enough for crop circles. But if you do find a monolith in your driveway or in your backyard, please let us know. You can just email us or send us a picture, put on our Facebook page, whatever. Tweet it. And if you want to, if our listeners want to support the mission, I guess, of Sam and myself, feel free to go to our webpage. It's anchor.fm/MNO-NIKAN. You can find us on Spotify or whatever to help support us. Just go to our webpage, click support, and a couple options will pop up. You know, it's amazing how far 99 cents will go to two guys like us, right? So, hopefully right now we're actually trying to get money to do some traveling, because I really want to go up north and, you know, really get some good stuff going. So, thank you in advance, Miigwech. All right, back to the show. Hey, Sam, apparently, you know, you kind of disappeared off the face of the earth due to fasting, right? I think you did a 3 or 4 day social media fast kind of thing. Was it a food fast also? Was it just water? Was there any specific reasons, or was it just to clear the mind?
Yeah, I did take a few days off there. Just kind of disappear sometimes. I'm like that. If I feel the need to kind of pull back from society, I'll do it. Don't make me threaten y'all. I decided to do a 1 day fast last week. I believe it was Tuesday. And I was hoping to get some answers and, just to some personal things going on. And I didn't really get the answers clearly. But by the end of that 1 day, I had decided that I would do a social media fast, and I'd try to do that for 4 days. And so I more or less didn't get on any apps that would go to the internet, and I don't watch the news anymore. So I just kind of disconnected with the world. I did watch cartoons on my phone, I won't lie. I did watch cartoons to help me get through it. It wasn't a spiritual type of fast or anything. And I did return to eating, of course, you know. I did go back to eating. It wasn't a real fast, just a social media fast. And honestly, I think it was good for me. I know that we're on a platform here on the internet, and I'm not trying to shortchange the internet or the people that make a living off the internet or enjoy it. But I do think it is good to kind of disconnect every now and then. For me, it's just to kind of make sure that that the difference that I'm making is in the direction that I want to go in. I don't want to spend my time chasing things I don't like, trying to change them and do things about it if I feel like they're just going in the wrong direction. I can let those issues go off in the wrong direction, because I feel like they're heading off a cliff anyway. So I can either choose to stop and watch them go off the cliff and make that part of my experience, or find something in another direction. And that's sort of what I was doing, was just to make sure that I was going in the direction I wanted to with a lot of things in life, not just here on the internet. It's not just about that, but it's easier to be able to think clearly if you're disconnected from everything, and that would include the internet.
There is two things that every culture definitely has, and it's a creation story and a flood story. And so, you know the creation story is real because No way you can look around. You definitely know the flood story's real. Just the, you know, I was reading a couple of different things, different theorists' thoughts, and a lot about the Tower of Babel, or Babel, I guess Babel, right? And it was talking about, like, how when everybody, whenever they climb the top, and God, the great creator, decided that was enough, and he split everybody to different regions. Well, when he did that, he also sent with them, with their own language, their own culture, their own religion to see God. So that way they could never communicate the same. And one of the things was, is that you weren't really supposed to go on your crusades, I guess, because you're supposed to keep everything separate. If not, mankind will become back the same. You know, everybody speaking the same language. Everybody speaking. And it's kind of true. That's the thing. If you think about what we're doing, we're losing a lot of languages every day. You know, it's mostly what's English, Chinese, Spanish, probably European dialect. I have to look that number up to see what the top languages are that are spoken. But, you know, have you ever thought about that, though? We're going back to one language again. Sam, what are your takes on that, man? I'm expecting a golden goose answer on this one.
Yeah, that is a great question, Josh. That's a great topic to discuss also. We may have to break this down into a few different segments just so I don't get too far out there. The first one is about the creation stories and the flood story that seems to happen in every creation story. That does appear to be a world event. Science and scripture both back it up. Everybody agrees on that one, and I think that that's good. I think that some of the things people wonder, is it one story that's being retold through different cultures, or if each culture did make it through that flood? I think that's a more valid way to go about finding the truth in it, is to consider that multiple cultures did make it through. It's in my gut that the South American story has some legitimacy to it, and that people did make it through down there, and that the Mesopotamian story has been retold by multiple perspectives. And then, if you want to add on to it, you also have the Hopi story. The Hopis went down into the earth, and then they came back out once the earth was ready. And so I think theirs also has some validity to it too. Now, the Tower of Babel story is one of the ones that I find the most interesting. I personally think it's out of place in our understanding, in that I believe that the Tower of Babel happened before Noah. I think that that story predates Noah, and is one of the times that is one of the instances that led up to God deciding to flood the world. I believe that's where you have Nimrod deciding to build this tower up into the sky. The Sumerians say that it was done during a time that both Enki and Enlil were gone. I guess, I don't know where they went. I guess they went back to space or back down to the bottom of the ocean. But they decided to build this tower up to the sky. And I don't know if, you know, it looked like an abomination to the gods because people were rising up. But when you look at it in another way, that it was a receiver, a communication tower, that was able to communicate messages to otherworldly places and receive those messages, then it starts making a different kind of sense in a higher technology society. It would say that the people of humanity were trying to reach out and contact otherworldly beings, and Enki and Enlil didn't approve of that because they, you know, they had Earth as their, that was their planet. Now, if you follow on that line of thinking, the person that ran, the person or entity that ran this incoming spot, I guess he'd be like radar on MASH, but he'd be the first to get the messages from the other worlds. That was Lucifer. And that Lucifer, being like he was the person of light, that he took these messages in, and because he was in that position, he took most of the brunt of the blame.
Hey, Sam, in your big bag of tricks, which I know you have, I am, when it comes to flood stories, all the ones I know are from the Bible. I know a couple of native ones. Do you have some other ones that you could perhaps entertain us with? That way we can compare different cultures. That'd be pretty cool. You know, because a lot of our listeners, they have only heard maybe one or two flood stories. So, let's see what we can give them today.
Who is you to be asking me questions?
I got to talk. I got to tell what I feel. I got to talk about my life as I see it.
Sure, Josh. This first flood story that I'd like to share, it comes out of Mesopotamia. It's a Sumerian flood story, and I'm going to read it out of the Illustrated Encyclopedia of World Mythology by Arthur Cotterell and Rachel Storm. It's about Utnapishtim. According to this version of the Mesopotamian flood myth, Utnapishtim was the wise man who alone survived the flood. The gods Anu, Enlil, Ninurta, and Enugi decided to destroy humankind, having grown tired of their ways. However, Ea, the water god, warned Utnapishtim of the conspiracy and told him to build a boat and in it store the seeds of all life. Utnapishtim built a huge vessel 120 cubits high and loaded it with his family, his cattle, and the numerous other animals and birds. On the evening that he finished his work, a filthy rain began to fall, and everyone on earth was stricken with terror. For 6 days and six nights, the deluge continued until at daybreak on the seventh day, it suddenly ceased, and all that was left of humanity was a vast heap of thick mud. Utnapishtim, whose marvelous boat had come to rest on the summit of Mount Nasir, cried out in grief. He let loose one bird after another from his boat, but they all returned, having found nowhere they could light. However, when at last Utnapishtim released a raven, it failed to return, signifying that it must have found dry land. In gratitude to the gods, Utnapishtim placed offerings to them on the summit of the mountain. Enlil, however, was furious to see that a human being had escaped the wrath of the gods. Ea eventually managed to calm Enlil down, whereupon Enlil took Utnapishtim and his wife by the hand and said that from now on they would be immortal, like the gods themselves. So that's the epic of Utnapishtim. And basically what you can see is similar in that is, you have the gods that are angry and decide to wipe out mankind. And then you have the kindness, you know, from Ea, the water god, to tell Utnapishtim to build a boat. And this time it rains for 6 days and six nights. And he takes the seeds of life, which that's interpreted as meaning the seeds of all the plants. And that's a pretty good strategy. It would take a smaller boat. Sometimes I wonder if that's Utnapishtim or Utnapishtim, if you catch my drift. The second flood story that I'd like to mention, because I haven't seen anything really published on it, but there's a lot of information out there if you are into the deep research. but it's the Tartarian flood story. The Tartarian flood story is a mud flood in which the earth is flooded with mud. The more you look into it, there's some interesting things, but it involves these like thunder sticks that people will put to the ground, and it vibrates and generates mud. I don't know if it has to do with the Vajra, which is considered like a lightning bolt, but it's a peculiar one. I'd suggest you look into it yourself to decide if it's true or not.
Fire! 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 Fire!
Probably my favorite flood story from around the world comes from South America. It's the Peruvian flood story. If you're familiar with some of the geography down there, they've got some very steep peaks in the mountains. And at one time, this flood was coming. I would presume it's the same flood from the other flood stories. And of course, you can tell in all the other flood stories, you have the creator or the god or gods reaching out to a human in that area to let everybody else know, who then doesn't listen to them, and tragedy goes on to happen. And of course, we can always make up our minds about other human beings, whether to listen to them or whether to ignore them, call them crazy or call them wise. Well, down in South America, they didn't have the same situation. This flood was coming, and the creator chose to speak to a llama. And so this llama knew that the flood was coming, and the llama goes through all kinds of effort to try to lead the people to a higher ground. Eventually, the llama learns to speak the language of the people so that it can communicate this message. And of course, by this point, now everybody's stunned and shocked because no one has ever, you know, heard of a llama speaking their language. And so everybody follows the llama up to the top of one of these higher peaks. And then the flood happens. I believe their flood is a 40-day flood. And so the people are trapped on top of one of these mountains. And it's all because of the llama. The llama led them up there. I've read the book on it, but I haven't seen it online or any other information. It's the Peruvian flood story. I'd recommend anybody check that one out.
Okay, I'm going to jump to a Finnish myth. Like a river now runs the blood, like a stream is the bleeding, covering the berry twigs, hiding all the heathers. You know, in a lot of these flood stories, before I get going, sometimes it was blood. The world was covered in blood. Sometimes the world was covered in cosmic fire. So, I mean, it's just not water that the world was flooded with. But in Finland, the Finnish myth has a character named Benoman who builds a boat on a mountain. He does it secretly with the help of a god who makes the axe strokes silent. So he has this axe that every time he hits the wood, chops it, there's no sound made. The devil makes the axe hit Benoman's knee, and blood starts flow out of his knee. But however, due to his magic skills, the blood is stopped and the boat is finished. In search of the magical blood stopping, Velma learns a spell that is able to finish the building of the boat. Seal grease was used for caulking, and a canopy was made from a fish hide. However, this boat was not used to save the mankind, but to take Benoman to Pohjola. And there he goes up into the primordial ocean and creates the world of a new shore where the land of Pohjola culture starts. So that is one. That's Finland. It's very kind of confusing. So basically, he kind of creates the earth with a silent axe and a soundish axe in the blood of his knee. Let's see. I believe there is another one. And it is, you know, I want to say it's Filipino, a Philippine one that I've read before. Let me pull my bag of tricks, right? Everyone has to have one. If I could be a storyteller, I would. But nope. Nope, 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 nope. I think it's a good tour. Oh, man. Let me find my mind. Philippines. All right. Here it is. Okay. It's the flood story, Agorot, which is, like I said, this is a Philippine story. So, once upon a time, which I found from a sacred text, actually. So, once upon a time, when the world was flat and there were no mountains, there lived two brothers, the son of Lunawig, who is the Great Spirit. So, of course, there's always a Great Spirit, right? The brothers were fond of hunting, and since no mountains had formed, there's no good place to catch the wild pig and deer. The older brother said, "Let us cause water to flow over the world and cover it, then the mountains will rise up." So they caused water to flow all over the earth, and when it was covered, they took the head basket of the town and set it for a trap. The brothers were very much pleased when they went and looked for their trap, for they had caught not only many wild pigs and deer, but many people also. Now Lunawig looked down from the place in the sky and saw that his sons had flooded the earth, and all that in the world, there was just one spot which was not covered. And he saw that all the people in the world had been drowned except one brother and sister who lived in Pocus. Then Lunawig descended and called to the young boy and girl, saying, "Oh, you're still alive." The boy said, "Yes, we're still alive, but very cold." So Lunawig commanded his dog and deer to get fire for the boy and girl. The dog and the deer swam quickly away, but Lunawig waited a long time, though they did not return. The boy and girl kept getting colder and colder. Finally, Lunawig went after the dog and deer and got them. He said, "Hey, why are you so long and bring the fire to Pocus? Get ready and come with fire while I watch you, for the boy and girl are cold." Then the dog and the deer took the fire and started to swim through the flood, but when they had gone only a little way, the fire was put out. Lunawig commanded them to get more fire, and they did. But they swam only a little way again when the deer went out. And now the dog would have been extinguished also had Lunawig not gone to him and taken it. As soon as Lunawig reached Pocus, he built a big fire which warmed the brother and sister. The water evaporated so that the world was it before, except now there are mountains. The brother and sister married and had children, and thus there came to be many people on the earth. Wow. You know, that's a brother and sister getting married. Kind of falls into a creation story. So, I mean, that's another random thought which me and Sam will spend some time on too. Do the creation stories sometimes... Sometimes it appears they come after the flood story, and others, it seems that the creation, so is the creation story before the flood story or after the flood story? That is a great topic in itself. Close your ears. Close your eyes. It's a Nana Bozo story. So, it's November 30th. There is snow up north. There's snow in Colorado. So, there's snow on the ground, okay? So, I'm okay. Really, I am. I am having surgery tomorrow, so maybe I shouldn't tell the story. Anyways, I'll go ahead and tell it. This, the Ojibwe have a couple different stories, and this one is about the Great Serpent, okay? One day, when Nana Bozo returned to his lodge after a long journey, he was looking for his cousin. He didn't see his cousin anywhere. He kept calling his name, didn't hear no answers. So he looked around in the sand for the tracks. But when he kept looking, he noticed that there was a trail of the Great Serpent. He knew his cousin had been seized by the enemy, the serpent. So Nana Bozo picked up his bows and arrows and followed the track of the serpent. He went over the Great River, climbed mountains, crossed over valleys, and came to the deep shores of the Manitou Lake, which is now also known as Spirit Lake, Lake of the Devils. So the trail of the Great Serpent led to the edge of the water. Nana Bozo could see the bottom of the lake, and underneath it was the house of the Great Serpent. Now, if you remember a couple of previous episodes, we talked about this underwater house in a different story, right? If not, I think it was episode 2 or 3. It's the one with the snakes, where the Thunderers pulled out of the water, and they were knocking the snakes over. There is the underwater house, right there. We're hitting it again, right? Okay, then back to the story, sorry. So Daniel Bozo could see at the bottom of the lake the house of the great serpent. It was filled with evil spirits who were servants and companions. They were scary and ugly and horrendous. But most of all, like their master, they all resembled spirits, serpent spirits. In the center of this group was the great serpent, coiling his terrifying length around his cousin, Nana Bozo. So yeah, Nana Bozo's cousin just wrapped his tail around him. The head of the serpent was red as blood. His eyes were like fire, orange piercing fire. His entire body is armed with ardent glistening scales of every color and shade. Looking down, Nana Bozo decided that he would get revenge for the death of his cousin. He looked up to the clouds and said, "Disappear!" And the clouds went out of sight. "Winds, be still at once!" And the winds quieted down. When the air over the Lake of the Spirits had become stagnant, Nana Bozo said, "Sun, burn the lake, make the water boil." So sure enough, he figured he would make the serpent come out of the lake looking for, you know, to cool down. And there he'd get the enemy. There he'd get Nana Bozo and get his revenge. After giving all these orders, Nana Bozo took his bows and arrows and went to a spot where he thought the serpents would come to shade. He changed himself, because remember, he's a shapeshifter, to a broken stump of a withered tree. The winds, you know, were still, air stagnant. The cloudless sky, soon the water became bubbling, and the serpent looked around, and they came looking around. They looked for Nana Bozo. They listened for him, but they didn't hear nothing. They said, "Oh, Nana Bozo's sleeping." So they plunged beneath the waters as they, which seemed to hiss because of their evilness. Not long after, the lake became more and more troubling. It was bubbling, the water was hitting the banks. Finally, the great serpent came to the surface of the water and moved towards the shore. His blood-red crest glowed. His scales was blinding, because it was like a glitter of a sleet-covered forest beneath the winter sun. He was followed by all the evil spirits. There were so many of them. I mean, just multitudes of snakes just coming out of the water. When they saw the broken stump of the withered tree, which they thought was Nana Bozo, they knew how sneaky he was. So one of the serpents approached the stump, wounded his tail around it, and tried to drag it in the lake. Nana Bozo could hardly keep from crying, for the trail of the monster pickled his sides, but he stood firm and silent. The evil spirits keep moving on. Great serpents glided in the forest and wounded many of his coils around trees. They all found shade but one. One remained near the shore to listen for Nana Bozo. So all the snakes are everywhere in the shade except for one, because they're all fearful of Nana Bozo. From the stump, Nana Bozo watched until all the serpents were asleep and the guard was looking the other direction. He drew his arrow from his quiver and aimed at the heart of the great serpent. It reached its mark. With a howl that shook the mountain, startled the wild beast, the monster woke. They were all scared in rage and terror, and the great serpent jumped back in the water. And at the bottom of the lake was still the body of Nana Bozo's cousin, right? All right, we're going to take a quick break, and I'll get right back to the story. Going to kind of rewind it right here. So Nana Bozo, he's a tree stump. He's just pulled out his bow and arrow and just shot the great serpent in the heart, right? So now the snakes and everybody just start jumping back into the lake. And Nana Bozo notices his cousin's laying at the bottom. And in their fury, they tore his cousin into thousands of pieces. His shredded lungs rose to the surface and covered the lake with whiteness. This great serpent knew soon that he would die, but they were determined to destroy Nana Bozo. They caused the water of the lake to swell upward and to pound against the shore with the sound of many thunders. Madly, the flood rolled over the land, over the tracks of Nana Bozo, carrying with it rocks and trees. High on the crest of the highest wave floated the wounded great spirit. His eyes glared around him, his hot breath mingled with the hot breath of his companions. Nana Bozo, fleeing before the angry waters, thought of his children. He ran through the valley, shouting, "Run to the mountaintops! The great serpent is angry and is flooding the earth! Run! Run! Run!" So Nana Bozo is just flying through all the villages, right? Telling everybody, "Run up top! Run up top!" The people caught their children and found safety in the mountains. Nana Bozo continued his flight along the base of the western hills and high up on the mountains beyond the Great Lakes far to the north. There he found many men and animals that escaped from the flood that was already covering the valley and plains and even the highest hill. Still, the waters continued to rise. Soon, all the mountains were under the flood except the one which Nanobozo stood. And there he grabbed timber and made a raft. And men and women and animals got on the raft. And soon the mountaintops disappeared from their view and they were floating on top of the water. For many days they floated. And finally the flood began to subside and they were able to see mountains and trees once again, the plains and the valleys. When the water disappeared from the land, the people survived, learned that the great serpent was dead and his companions had returned to the bottom of the lake of the spirit. They remained there this day for fear of Nanobozo. They never came forth again. Right. Nanobozo killed the great serpent in the story. So, you know, it's kind of one thing that really shocks me about this story is where were the Thunderers? Because their enemy is the same as Nanobozo. It's the great serpent. You know, I feel like, oh, maybe they had not been came down yet. Because, I mean, like I said, this is right after creation. So maybe the Thunderer, I don't know. Just food for thought right there. Because I've told the story many times, and I've always wondered, like, why did we not add the Great Thunderers to the story? Because there might be another version out there where they, like, picked up Nanobozo, I bet. Took him up to the trees. You know, when your stapler's turned upside down on your desk, it's because you listened to the story today. No, I'm just kidding. There's snow. I promise. There is snow out there.
Iguin Megwedge, thank you guys. Thank you everyone for listening to our podcast. We really appreciate it. Our listenership keeps growing weekly, which is pretty cool. I didn't know if me and Sam would make it to an episode 7 or not, and here we are. So we'll have another one done this weekend. I'm actually probably going to start some fasting myself. I mentioned earlier I'm having surgery tomorrow. Or actually it'll be today because this gets published tomorrow, according to the algorithms of the device. But Migwich.